This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show. This is one of three segments for the Franklin Mass School Committee meeting held on Tuesday, October 27, 2020. The meeting was conducted in a hybrid format. Some of the school committee and central office personnel were in the council chambers. The remainder of the committee was remote, along with the public, via conference bridge, all to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. I've split the almost three-hour meeting into three logical segments. The first segment covers from the opening through the superintendent's report, which in turn covers the reopening status moving from remote to hybrid. That runs approximately 52 minutes. The second segment picks up from that through for primarily the presentation and discussion on the comprehensive facility analysis. This is the longest of the three segments. This runs an hour and 20 minutes. In the third and final segment, that picks up from the completion of the analysis, covering the discussion action items and the remainder of the meeting up to where the school committee enters executive session, from which they do not return to a public meeting. That's approximately 40 minutes. The show notes contain links to the meeting agenda and to the presentation document. Let's listen to this third segment of the school committee meeting of October 27, 2020.
Okay, moving right along. Dr. Hearn, discussion action items.
Discussion action items. So we have the remaining MASC resolutions, numbers 7 through 10. And again, I have worded this in the affirmative, and the school committee can choose to vote accordingly. There are four, and I would offer to read a summary of each one rather than the
that would
entire
be good
resolution.
Yes, thank you. Just
that
like last time,
the chair. Okay. So I recommend adoption of MASC resolution number 7, attempts by the U.S. Department of Education to direct funding to private schools, and this is related to some of the equitable funding legislation that has been part of the COVID-19 relief funding, that districts would share portions of the funding with private schools, which is something that we do with things like the Title I grant. So this MASC resolution would involve MASC petitioning the Attorney General of Massachusetts to review and recommend to the Executive Office of Education and the Mass Department of Elementary and Secondary Education to review the formal language of such statutes and determine the distribution of federal funds to benefit economically disadvantaged students, and further that the Attorney General provide legal guidance to state agencies in Massachusetts to implement such formulas based on the actual language and legislative intent of the statute, should that be in variance with any advisory issued by the U.S. Secretary of Education. There was some confusion this summer with some of the intent and advisories that we had seen.
So we want to go one by one, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so, yeah, we'll so we have a, I'm looking for a motion to adopt resolution number 7, attempts by the U.S. DOE to direct funding to private schools. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second? Further discussion? Okay, seeing none, the vote will come on the motion to accept resolution number 7. Roll call, Jen D'Angelo? Tim Keenan?
Yes.
Judy Pfeiffer?
Yes.
Mary Jane Schofield?
Yes.
Denise Spencer?
Yes.
Elise Stokes?
Yes.
Ann Bergen? Yes, motion carries. Resolution number 8.
Okay, resolution number 8. I recommend adoption of resolution number 8, membership of a school committee member on the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education. This resolution would involve proposed legislation that would include one representative from a school committee from a list of three nominees provided by the Massachusetts Association of School Committees and five additional members to serve on the Board of Education at the state level.
Okay. Is there a motion to accept resolution number 8?
So moved.
Second. Okay. Is there a second? Okay. Motion and a second. Any further discussion, questions, comments? Okay, seeing none, the vote will come on the motion. All those in favor of resolution number 8, signify, we'll do roll call. Jen D'Angelo? Jen?
Yes.
I think she's muted. Okay, sorry, Jen.
It was quiet.
Sorry. Tim Keenan?
Yes.
Judith Ponfeffer?
Yes.
Mary Jane Schofield?
Yes.
Denise Spencer?
Yes.
Elise Stokes?
Yes.
And Ann Bergen, yes. Motion carries. Resolution number 9.
Okay, I recommend adoption of MASC resolution number 9, providing equity for sexual orientation, LGBTQ plus students, teachers, and staff. This resolution would resolve that MASC file legislation and petition our federal legislative delegation to also file legislation which would have the effect of adding sexual orientation and gender identity to the list of protected classes in order to provide equity and support our LGBTQ plus students, teachers, and staff, and petition our legislative delegation.
Okay. Is there a motion to accept resolution number 9?
So moved. So moved.
A second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion, comments? Seeing none, the vote will come on the motion. All those in favor of adopting resolution number 9, Jen D'Angelo?
Yes.
Tim Keenan?
Yes.
Judy Pfeffer?
Yes.
Mary Jane Schofield?
Yes.
Denise Spencer?
Yes.
Elise Stokes?
Yes.
And Ann Bergen, yes. Motion carries.
And I recommend resolution number 10 relative to the monitoring of attendance of students during the pandemic. And this resolution would involve MASC's advocacy for legislation and regulation that protects the rights of parents to withhold their children from school for reasons for health status and health risk. It would also advocate for regulations that hold districts accountable for the attendance of students, but provide appropriate exemptions for students who experience or require extended absence from school due to health-related issues or concerns related to the COVID-19 pandemic. Petition the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education to waive all accountability requirements regarding attendance for the 2020-2021 school year, and that such regulations exempt districts from sanctions on the basis of attendance when such absences are related to the public health crisis.
Okay. Is there a motion to adopt resolution number 10?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion, questions?
I have a quick question.
Oh, go ahead, Jen.
Yeah, I thought that there was, didn't they revamp attendance codes to support this?
Attendance codes have been revamped. So basically, if a student, for example, is hybrid and is in quarantine, for example, but participating in school fully remotely for those 2 weeks, they could still be marked present, but they would be marked virtually present and their instructional mode would not change.
So is this, what? So who is this addressing?
I think, I could imagine a situation where if a student, I think many children who are ill with COVID-19 have mild symptoms and might still be able to engage in work remotely. But hypothetically, there may be children who aren't able or who may be at higher risk for medical reasons. And as a result, we would not be held accountable for chronic absenteeism, for example, if they were ill for an extended period of time.
Okay.
And not able to participate virtually.
And not be able, without being able to participate virtually. Oh, okay. If they were, like.
The part I was missing. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
Not accessing education at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they're ill and can't participate remotely.
Beyond like home hospitalization, that piece? Because don't we have that in place too, to kind of cover that?
We would, but if they weren't able to participate in that and the timing might not trigger it.
Okay. I was trying to figure out where that gap would be, where this would kind of pick up.
Yeah, it's a good question, Jen.
Yeah, because it sounds like all those kind of elements are covered. So why would we not want to kind of pay attention to kids who aren't engaging? but
I think we certainly do want to, and we are paying attention to kids who aren't engaging. I think this is more if there was a gap between home hospitalization and a student who was ill with COVID and couldn't participate, because there may be a student who's so ill that there is limited opportunity for them to be, you know, tutored through through that alternative means of accessing education. So I think it would be a way to not have it kind of show up on our accountability.
And wouldn't this also just sort of go statewide? In other words, whether or not we're doing it in Franklin, this covers, this protects families across the entire state that may have a different, you know, it's for legislation and regulation across the entire state. So we're advocating, we're just being a voice to go out and advocate for all families and kids in this situation, I think. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah, but it's only COVID-19.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. During the pandemic, yeah.
Okay. So hopefully it'll be over before they get it to the state house.
Maybe, we hope so.
Yeah.
That's the spirit, MJ.
I guess. Come on.
Any further discussion or, okay. We already have a motion and a second, so vote will come on the motion. Jen?
No.
I didn't hear you. Did you say yes?
No.
No, okay, no. Tim?
Yes.
Judy?
Yes.
MJ?
Yes.
Denise?
Yes.
Elise?
Yes.
And Ann, yes. Motion carries 6-1. You know what, I forgot, and I didn't mean to do it. We were talking about, I don't want to ever cut the public off, and Denise kindly reminded, I said, if I do something wrong, just remind me. Just, we always have public comment at a meeting. If we try to limit it, we don't, again, per policy, we don't engage in dialogue or, but if they're, we're asking people because not to repeat something that's been said, but if you, anyone wanted to add anything, public comment relative to the facilities analysis report, we certainly, if people could limit it to under 3 minutes, if you had a comment. I didn't want to cut anyone off. If there is someone who would like to.
I'd like to make a comment.
Could you just a name and address, that would be helpful for the minutes.
Sure. I'm Brian Bodilla and 133 Oak Street.
Go ahead. We're happy to hear your public comment.
Yeah, so it seems that so I'm not sure what the goal of the 0 and 10 year projections were, but I'm curious why closing Davis Thayer wasn't considered to be a viable option when closing both Davis Thayer and Parmenter is considered viable, especially when closing Parmenter seems to immediately cause a capacity problem with Jefferson Sullivan. And from the population projections, it seemed that there actually wasn't a capacity problem with Parmenter until 5 or 6 years from now. So which I suspect is why, given the, since it was said to be over capacity in 10 years, that maybe that's why only closing Thayer was considered not a viable option. But it seems like those things are separable. So I'm wondering what the recommended time frame for those things are, especially given that there would be additional work required, whether it's redistricting or adding capacity to Helen Keller in order to support the students from Parmenter. So that's it.
Okay, thank you. And that will be part of the discussion that goes forward.
Great.
Anyone else? I see you have Rebecca Ballinger. Go ahead, just name and address, please. Oh, you're muted.
You're muted.
After doing this for 9 months, you'd think I'd know better. My name is Rebecca Ballinger, and I live at 18 Charles Drive. And for full disclosure, I work at Davis Thayer. I just wanted to make two quick comments. Thank you for all of the questions from school committee tonight. They were very thoughtful. And I know that we all appreciate that in the community. I do get nervous when I hear statements of, we paid to have this done and we need to just be adults and follow through on that, when we know that there's a big process that we've been told we will be following. So I think that we need to make sure that we continue to follow the process. And as adults, we also need to think about the fact that the two schools that are being discussed first and foremost are our two trauma schools as well. And that can't be minimized either. We need to take into full consideration all of the factors, not just one point of data. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? You see anything, Denise?
I do not see anything.
Okay. And I appreciate, thank you for reminding me.
I just did what I was told.
No, you did a good job. Mr. Jaguar, policy first readings?
Yes. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. So we have some policies. We have five policies for your review tonight. And I wanted to just talk through the first four. You'll see policy AC, ACAB, ACAB-R1, and ACAB-R2 are all related to a former policy that we current policy we have now, which is AC, which combined harassment and discrimination into one policy. Recently, there's been some changes that have occurred with the legislation, and our Title IX policies, they've narrowed the scope. So in May, the Department of Ed issued some final regulations regarding that, and they needed to be put into effect for the school year. Mm-hmm. So with that said, our policy subcommittee met and reviewed this. Our attorneys have provided sample language, and the reason we have those four policies is because we've broken down and narrowed the scope of our policies so that they're more clear and concise and reflect the updated language. Just to hit on a few things for the community and for our school committee members, I know that you've had a chance to read these, but basically when we look at the fundamental changes, we've taken policy AC and narrowed it to be just a non-discrimination policy. We've then taken policy ACAB and took out the harassment component of our original one and broken it out, so they're separated. And that's per the attorney's recommendations in many of the school districts that work with our attorneys. They're providing the same language for us. And then what we decided was, instead of including the procedures for the harassment and Title IX, we broke those out as separate. So that's why you will see an R1 and an R2. Those are separate because they actually clearly define the scope of the procedures for folks who feel as though a violation's occurred. It outlines the steps that need to be taken and what should be happening at our school district, within our school district, when those things happen. So that's why there's four policies. It came out of one. Mm-hmm. Just to highlight some of the major changes in Title IX, some of the major changes include notice to the complainant. So the person who is alleged to have violated a Title IX requirement needs to be notified during the investigatory process. Also, interim remedial measures need to be applied for both parties, the reported victim and the alleged violator, who they are referring to as the respondent in our policies. Also, a copy of the report, the investigation report, is required to be provided in its draft form to both parties prior to finalizing, so that both parties have an opportunity to provide feedback on the report. The investigator then would finalize that report and provide the final summary as well. So those are just some of the major changes to the Title IX regulations, and that's why we have the policies laid out. We also included clearer language around due process rights for individuals. So I would say that I could stop there for questions, and then each of these would need its own vote.
Oh, okay, each would.
I believe because they're in their first read form, but just know that the first four are bundled together as part of that harassment, discrimination.
Okay.
Sexual harassment.
Does anyone have any questions? MJ?
Yeah, just for clarification,
The R after the the letters for the policy, that indicates that those are regulations. We're not making this stuff up.
Okay.
They're the regulations.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, Policy Chair.
Any other comment? Stop it, Denise.
Okay, so then no comments on any of these so that we can start to vote on each one, right? Okay, so then we would, I would look for a motion to accept AC, non-discrimination. We have to go through each one. Is there a motion?
So moved.
And a second? Second? Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, very, very good.
For clarification for the minutes, I think it's to move it to second reading.
Thank you for the correction. And thank you for your correction previously. Okay. I'm sorry. So to move the policy to a second reading. So is there a motion? I apologize for that. To move AC non-discrimination to a second reading. And
second.
Okay. Further discussion. Okay. Seeing none, let's do a roll call vote. Jen.
Yes.
Tim Keenan. Judy, yep. MJ?
Yes.
Denise Spencer?
Yes.
Elise?
Yes.
Stokes and Ann Bergen, yes. Okay. Is there a motion to move AC, policy ACAB, harassment to a second reading? We need a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Any further discussion, comments? Okay, seeing none, we vote will come on the motion. All those in favor to move to a second reading, Jen D'Angelo? Tim Keenan?
Yes.
Judy?
Yes.
MJ?
Yes.
Denise?
Yes.
Elise?
Yes.
And Ann, yes. Motion carries. Okay. Is there a, I look for a motion to move policy ACABR1, regulation, grievance procedure for complaints of harassment and discrimination to a second reading. Is there a motion?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, vote will come on the motion to move to a second reading. Jen D'Angelo?
Yes.
Tim Keenan? Yes. Judy?
Yes.
MJ? Denise? Yes. Elise?
Yes.
Oh, Denise and Elise. I didn't hear an answer. And Ann, yes. Motion carries. Okay. We need now policy ACABR2, grievance procedure for complaints of sexual harassment under Title IX of the Education Amendments of 1972. We need a motion to move that to second reading.
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion, comments? Seeing none, vote will come on the motion. Jen?
Yes.
Tim?
Yes.
Judy?
Yes.
MJ?
Yes.
Denise?
Yes.
Elise?
Yes.
And Ann, yes. Okay, and finally.
So, thank you, Dr. Bergen. So the next policy is our financial assistance policy. It's JQA. And to just clarify, a small change that we made, but a significant one, because we've issued new Chromebooks, as you've heard in the discussions today, we provide Chromebook insurance for families. A decision was made within the district to look to reduce fees depending on someone's financial assistance status, and therefore to tier the level of insurance and the costs associated for family members in order to mirror our school lunch program, for example, to make sure that it's within those guidelines. In order to do that, if we had just done that on its own, it would have violated this financial assistance policy. Mm-hmm. And you'll notice on the second page, we had Chromebook insurance as an exclusion, meaning that the policy would read that full insurance payment was required by all individuals. Mm-hmm. Given that we've issued and we're requiring families to use the school-issued Chromebooks, we wanted to provide the insurance as appropriate based on the financial situation. We wanted to make sure that we adhere to the similar guidelines. So with that said, in this policy, as part of the update, would be to eliminate Chromebook insurance as an exception so that we can provide the tiered level of insurance.
Is there a motion to move policy JQA, financial assistance, to a second reading?
So moved.
A second?
Second.
Okay, any further discussion? All right, seeing none, the vote will come on the motion to move that JQA financial assistance to a second reading. Jen? Tim? Yes, yep, thumbs up. Judy?
Yes.
MJ?
Yes.
And Denise?
Yes.
And Elise?
Yeah.
And Amber, yes. Carries. Thanks, Lucas. Discussion only, Dr. Hearn?
In your packet is the BICO quarterly report. New executive director started this summer and has provided, as is customary, a quarterly report, and I put it in the packet for your interest.
October 1 enrollment?
And then in discussion only is the October 1 enrollment update. So this is a summary of information for the committee that we have put together over the past couple of years. And I just want to share a few things with you related to our enrollment at this time. We are consistent with what's happening in other districts where we are seeing some flux that is unusual for us given the coronavirus pandemic and some choices that families have or have made. And so the Superintendents Association is working to compile data across districts. And as such, I thought we would use that as a basis to share information with you about some of the changes that we're experiencing in Franklin. Districts are keeping close tabs. We always keep close tabs on our October 1 enrollment numbers because that's what Chapter 70 funding is based off of. Mm-hmm. Although Franklin for some time has been a hold harmless district, so we're guaranteed a certain threshold of Chapter 70 funding based on the current formula. And our increment is, kind of modest, incremental increase is modest based on those numbers. But we do want every student in our district, we do keep our eyes on the enrollment because of how that drives the funding from the state. And we also want to make sure that we're providing, the quality of education that families are looking for. So we are seeing some changes this year as a result of the pandemic. As we had expected, our pre-K enrollment is lower. We always have a bit of a lower pre-K enrollment at the beginning of the year, and then spaces fill up over the course of the year. But we are starting in this year at 79 students in our preschool. And the enrollment is broken down for you in other grade spans as well. And we are expecting, as you know from the McKibben report, some decrease in the district. So some of this has been expected. We have seen a big bump in homeschool enrollment. Much of that came, I would say, in the last few weeks in September and early October when families made. So I know some questions came up earlier in the summer. We were looking at it in sort of the August and early September timeframe. And once school started, we started to see an increase in that homeschool request, going to 66 this year. And again, that's consistent with some of the trends that we've heard from neighboring districts. And then in terms of the net number of students transferring out of Franklin, we are down 60. That includes the homeschool students. So that includes the additional homeschool students for the 2020 school year. And just for historical comparison, last year we were down 13 students net based on kind of move-ins and students who were departing. And that was the year that the charter school opened. So although the charter school expanded, we ended up down only 13 students. And the year prior, we had additional 35 students move into the district after taking into account kind of that kindergarten through grade 11 cohort moving into first grade and 12th grade. So that's a bit of our enrollment for this year. We provided some additional detail on where homeschool children are by grade. On the third page is our student enrollment for October 14th. That was the snapshot that we grabbed. Those won't be the official October 1 numbers and will vary slightly with what Jerry will ultimately analyze. But we wanted to give the committee a bit of a early comparison with respect to what our enrollment ended up being versus what Dr. McKibben had forecast last February. And so those numbers are there for you. In some places, he was spot on, and I don't think he was 100% accurate in any one spot, but one student different, for example, at Kennedy. But there were some places where it's a bit lower than he had expected. And at Franklin High School is an additional 12 students than what he had predicted. But he'll do a formal analysis on that, but I wanted a quick snapshot. And then we have some historical data for you related to our enrollment, free and reduced price lunch, 504, students with disabilities, English language learners, percent race and ethnicity, as well as 4 years worth of trend data to share with you. And then on the final page, this data is a bit outdated. The school attending children report in terms of where students go outside of the district is reported in January. So with the exception of homeschool, which was gathered this fall, this data of selected other schools, this is not a comprehensive list of the private or parochial schools that or alternative schools that Franklin resident children attend. This is last spring's data. We're in the process of updating that earlier than January in order to get a picture of where students have chosen to go. So happy to answer questions or your comments.
Just let me just go real through quickly. I don't want to miss anyone. Any questions, comments? Jen, anything? No. Tim?
I'm all set.
All set. Judy?
All set.
All set. MJ?
I'm good.
Okay. Denise?
I'm good.
And Elise? I think Elise, I don't hear. And I guess not. Okay. Thanks, Dr. Hearn.
Right, thank you.
All right. Information matters. Budget subcommittee, as Dr. Hearn mentioned, we did meet. And planning, sort of a budget update, which Dr. Hearn provided tonight, and then also the reminder of our budget workshop on November 17th. And we discussed sort of what would happen at that workshop. We would be discussing the process and timelines, important budget facts, information, current information, looking at things like unfunded mandates, the special ed process and budgetary impact, and especially looking for committee members to hear what your priorities are for the next budget cycle, and also, you know, looking for places where we might save. So it's sort of that will be the focus of that workshop. We'll have a very, very specific agenda, but this was just sort of to meet to sort of get a look at that, and I think that's pretty much what we talked about. So again, November 17th budget workshop. Community relations.
What time is that workshop going to be?
6 o'clock, MJ.
How long is it going to last?
Don't know.
Is that a school committee meeting?
I think we were estimating 90 minutes, and it is not. Between.
Yeah, it's not a school committee. 90 minutes, MJ. I didn't have a time thing for it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Community relations, MASC, Denise.
So community relations met on October 20th. We'll be sending out our next newsletter shortly. So for MASC, have a busy few weeks ahead. So the MASC Delegate Assembly will be held on Saturday, November 7th. It will begin with the keynote event, Understanding the Connection Between Cultural Proficiency and Equity, which I'm very excited to attend. Mm-hmm. The full assembly begins at 1, where we'll review annual reports, nominations for life membership, election of offices, and vote on the proposed resolutions that we've gone over the past two meetings. In preparation for the assembly, there are two trainings being held this Friday and Saturday. The next MASC Lunch Professional Development Series is the school committee superintendent relations on Friday's November 6th at noon. And I'll be sure to send you all the recording for your information.
Excellent. Thank you. Facilities analysis, Elise, anything to add?
Yep, I know. So just a reminder, we're continuing to follow our process. We're collecting information. Next, we're going to shift to focus on gathering staff and family perspectives. After McKibben's demographic report presentation in February, we held a community information session to share the report's findings and engage the community. Now that this facilities analysis report is complete, we're looking forward to our second community information session on Wednesday, November 4th. Our subcommittee will meet this Thursday to plan out that session. Just a reminder to everyone that the information gathered up to this point is on the Davis Thayer Facilities Analysis webpage. I urge everyone to read through the information. Please reach out with any questions or comments. Our subcommittee has our own designated email address linked right on our webpage. All the email communication we receive is documented and will be considered when we get to the point of evaluating our options. And that's it for now.
Thanks, Elise.
Yep. So what time on the 4th, Elise?
Oh, in the evening, either 6:30 or 7. We've gone over this many times. Well, we're going to talk about it on Thursday, and I'll keep you posted.
All right. Thank you. MJ, policy? Any meet?
Well, yes, indeed. We have a meeting scheduled for Thursday, November 12th. And those are, you know, like all of the other subcommittee meetings, those are open meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever shows up. We never have company.
Thank you, do good work. Judy, joint PCCs?
We had one this afternoon at 4 o'clock, so I don't have my minutes put together yet. At our next meeting, I'll present them.
Okay, thanks, Judy. Substance Abuse Task Force, we met this morning. Lucas, that was a good meeting, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was excellent. It was excellent to have our student representatives join us as well. And I feel like this year, regardless of kind of the situation of having to meet virtually, the group is really engaged and excited to dive into that work. And I'm especially excited to partner with the SAFE Coalition and move that work forward with our committee as part of the task force. So I think we're going to see a lot come out of that work.
And I thought it was kind of neat that Jeff Roy is looking to, he wants 100 copies of the ride home. He wants to take that. And since Karen Spilka and I think Becca Roush helped with the funding, I'm not sure who helped. I know he did. That to see the outcome, and also the fire chief wants to take a whole bunch. He's on our committee too, and he was in our little subgroup, and he wants to take a bunch to make sure he hands out to families, and so that's pretty good. That's anyway, right. And then school wellness advisory, has that met?
That will be meeting. Our scheduled meeting is on November 4th, and then we have another one on November 17th, and we have student representatives and we'll kick off the year by similar to how we started the substance abuse task force and looking at our final minutes from May after the school closure, and then really setting some targeted goals that are authentic to our needs currently as they are. So I'm excited to help to partner in that work.
Excellent. And then I just wanted to just give a quick update on the social and racial justice committee, which we have representation. And they held a wonderful event on October 17th to amplify the work and voice of Black, Indigenous, and people of color artists of all ages within Franklin. And what was incredibly impressive was the artwork by our students incredible, and it was a very powerful event. So many, many people in the community, and it was all socially distanced. Mm-hmm. It was very, it was a good job. And I'm not sure when our next meeting is scheduled, but we'll make sure to share what goes on and report back on that. So I think that's it. Information matters, if I left anything off. And now, new business, Dr. Hearn.
New business. So at the next meeting, which is November 10th, the first meeting in November is your historical reorganizational meeting. We have also plans for the superintendent evaluation, and I will share goals for 2020-2021.
Okay.
And coming soon will be Portrait of a Graduate, but I'll talk to Dr. Bergen about the best dates to schedule that.
Good. That's good. That's exciting. Okay, consent agenda.
I recommend approval of the minutes from your October 13th, 2020 school committee meeting as detailed. And I recommend approval of the budget transfers as detailed.
Okay. Is there a motion to accept the consent agenda?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
Okay. Further discussion, comments, questions? No, seeing none, vote will come on the motion. Jen?
Yes.
Tim?
Yes.
Judy?
Yes.
MJ?
Yes.
Denise?
Yes.
Elise?
Yeah.
And okay, accepted. Payment of bills. I did review the bills. They are in order. Payroll, Jen? I think I can't hear.
Payroll is in order.
Okay, oh, thanks. Thanks, Jen. We heard you. Okay, so I think I covered everything. So at this point, I'm going to entertain a motion to adjourn from open session to go into executive session. I will read the purpose of going into executive session. Pursuant to Mass General Law, Chapter 30A, Section 21, A3, move to go into executive session to discuss strategy with respect to potential litigation. Also to discuss collective bargaining with the FEARN unit, as an open meeting may have a detrimental effect on the litigating position of the school committee, and the chair so declares, and not to reconvene in an open session. So I will entertain a motion to go into executive session.
So moved. Good job, Ann, meaning that.
Thanks. Thank you. And is there a second?
Second.
Okay, let's do a roll call vote then to go into adjourn and go into executive session. Jen?
Yes.
Tim?
Yes.
Judy?
Yes.
MJ?
Yes.
Denise?
Yes.
Elise?
Yeah.
Okay. We will not be coming back. Meeting is adjourned.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements, and I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. You can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.